fires deep, middle of the field, intercepted. An incredible pick by Patrick Peterson.
Welcome to Arizona Cardinals Underground, presented by the Arizona Cardinals mobile app. Visit azcardinals.com/app.
Touchdown, Arizona!
The latest news and notes from the guys who cover the team.
Oh, David Johnson, baby! A hop, a skip, a jump.
He is a freak. There's no doubt.
Rise up and make a play.
He's hit by Chandler Jones and sacked.
You've got to be kidding me.
Touchdown, Larry Fitzgerald!
This is football at its finest.
Here's Paul Calvisi.
You know, if Cardinals Underground had a budget for its own flag, it would be flying half-staff right now. There's no doubt about that. In honor of down goes David, it's one thing to lose the season opener. It's another thing to lose the most dynamic player on the roster. Paul Calvisi, Kyle Odegaard, Darren Urban trying to make sense of it all. Although I think we all agree the first question really should be to Darren Urban. And Darren,
yes.
Which Cardinals running back should I start in my fantasy league?
Should have seen that one coming, actually.
It's called gallows humor around here.
There you go.
You know, you got to try and laugh about the dislocated wrist that has put David Johnson on the injured reserve, and that means a minimum of eight weeks, doesn't it, gentlemen?
Well, and when we start talking about 8 weeks, I think I would absolutely caution that anybody thinking it's probably only 8 weeks, or anybody thinking that November 7th date that he would first be eligible to come off of IR.
2 days before the Seahawks. Tell me it could be.
I think I think we're going to be pushing this a while, and I think given his circumstances in his career, he needs to be very smart. Let's not forget, after the season's the first chance David Johnson has to get any kind of contract extension, and now we're talking about having done it for basically a year and four games, and there's going to be a lot said about that anyways. And it'll be interesting to see if he wants to come back, where this team is, when he could come back, and again, where his rehab is, because I would just caution anybody thinking that David Johnson is going to be back by November 10th or 12th or something. I'm not saying it can't happen, but I think you're probably being optimistic if you think that.
I mean, honestly, realistically, I'm not expecting him back this year. And if he is, then great. You know what I mean? That's gravy, and it means that you're in the race. Because if you're not in a playoff race, then it makes no sense to bring him back late season.
Yeah, well, I mean, if he's fully healthy, I think he'd want to come back. I think they want him back. And if you are talking about that 12-week mark or 11 weeks, there's still probably three or four games remaining, so you probably won't be eliminated from the playoffs at that point unless you really had a bad year up to then. So I kind of lean the other way, where I feel like he will be back this year, but like Darren said, it's probably not going to be near that eight-week threshold when you're talking about surgery and something that's a little bit tricky of an injury, it sounds like. So that, yeah, they're just going to have to keep this thing afloat however they can, really. I mean, the schedule isn't too hard. They can win some of these games, but we saw the struggles in Detroit already offensively, and now you take away your best running back and arguably your best receiver too.
And let's not forget, when we're talking about, you know, getting some kind of context to this, this is the similar injury to the wrist injury that tight end Troy Nicholas had a couple of years ago, and that wasn't a good one. I think these are the things you need to kind of remember, and especially when you think about David Johnson not only using his hands and wrists to run with the ball, but also to catch it, and you're going to want him to be a good receiver going forward. You want to make sure that his range of motion is right and all that stuff. I mean, these are the things you got to think about when you're talking about coming back and making sure it's fully healed and all that.
Did I see you in the locker room having a conversation with Nicholas?
Yes, you did.
Okay, because my question is, does he consider himself 100% now? Did he fully recover from that injury?
I think he feels he's more or less there at this point, but I mean, that was a couple years ago now. And one of the things he was telling me is, and this is, you know, he mentioned this before the official second opinion was over, but he basically told me that, you know, this is an injury in terms of his own injury. Now, obviously, he's not talking about David. He's talking about his own. But, you know, he's basically told if you don't get surgery, you know, the bones start growing into that ligament. You could be in a position where you get past a point of no return being able to fix it. Mm. You could have permanent damage. I mean, surgery was almost inevitable once this happened, and that's obviously why David's going to end up on IR.
Well, it got extremely real on Monday when Bruce Arians used the words possible career-ending injury.
Yeah.
I mean, I think that's where everyone went, whoa.
Well, and that's what Nicholas was saying. If you don't get it repaired right, you're done.
And that's why they made the prudent choice. And how no matter how hard that is, I think Bruce was saying that David would have rather played and he wanted to get back on the field as fast as he could. But clearly the surgery sets him up for his whole career, which is nice that the Cardinals pushed him to go that way and that he realized that, hey, this I have a lot of years in this league and let's make sure I'm fine moving forward. Because like Darren's talking about, if you don't handle it now and then there's complications later on, he's such a dynamic talent that you just want to get it fixed. And 8 weeks sounds like a long time right now, but this is a guy that can play for 8 years moving forward. So you just want to get everything fixed, get back to 100%. And on the bright side, it's a wrist injury. It's not an ACL. It's not something with his legs. He is a running back, and that's why he's so good. It's because he can move so well. So I think that's a good thing where if he can get that fixed, his legs are still pretty healthy.
You know, normally I save my Skip Bayless hot take towards the latter stages of Cardinals Underground.
Don't hold back,
when
Paul.
You guys are starting to wane and your energy is starting to dip just a little bit, but I'm just going to throw this out there. No David Johnson means a defense has no clue who to key on. It effectively erases all your tendencies. It makes you come up with a different DNA for your offense, a different identity. And I think the Colts go into this week, and they got to be thoroughly confused exactly how to game plan for the Arizona Cardinals. Now, do you have anyone nearly as dynamic in the backfield as David Johnson? No. But he became such a large part of the Cardinals' offense, and he had so many touches, and he had so much production. I mean, dare I say it became a little predictable?
Well, I mean, I think that's a fair statement in one sense, but that's in a little ways, that's like going back to last year when the Cardinals played the Patriots and the Patriots could say, well, we don't have Tom Brady, so you don't know what Jimmy Garoppolo is going to do. Well, you'd rather have Tom Brady out there. And again, that's what part of this is. But look, this is a team and a coaching staff and actually a lot of the same players that in, 2013 when Bruce Arians first showed up, he had Rashard Mendenhall and a rookie Andre Ellington, and there was no true dynamic back. I mean, Ellington obviously had some great plays that year, but they won 10 games that year with that kind of offense and a passing offense that had almost as many interceptions as touchdowns. The next year in 2014, Andre Ellington's supposed to be the big back and he ends up getting hurt, and they kind of get through the season without having a number one running back and without having their number one quarterback, and they still won 11 games. So it's not like this team hasn't been through this and hasn't shown that they can win.
Yeah, I would say this too real quick. Nobody's going to be standing around waiting for David Johnson to win them the game either. I mean,
well, that's true.
If anyone was sort of coasting and or sort of gauging themselves, I mean, everybody better bring it on every snap effective immediately.
And that's the thing. I mean, I don't see a way where your offense is better, even though maybe you are more unpredictable, but David Johnson helps when you do play action because teams are automatically jumping up looking for him. You're sending maybe a safety, maybe two guys on him when he's running routes, so now they can keep that safety back. It's going to hurt your offense unquestionably. Obviously, it sounds dumb to even say that, but teams don't have to worry about the most explosive guy on the Cardinals now. And against Detroit, none of those wide receivers really separated themselves that much running their routes. I mean, that's an issue too. So I think this is going to be all about the defense, where your offense is going to have to find a way to score some points. But I think at this point, we're at the point where we think that 2015 is a possibility without David Johnson. You're just not going to score that much.
Yeah,
I think it's all
true.
I think it's all on the defense, which I think looked really good in Detroit. And I feel optimistic about that group kind of leading the way. And I think that's how you're going to have to win games.
Well, and the other thing, too, is when you talk about unpredictability, okay, maybe they know that David Johnson's not getting it, but if Kerwin Williams is in the backfield, the chances are you're going to run. And if Andre Ellington's in the backfield, chances are you're going to throw, because the opposite isn't – they're not as good in the opposite kind of thing. I agree about the defense. I thought, actually, even if David Johnson was healthy, this team was probably going to have to be defense first, just because I don't know if the passing game is there. You talk about the receivers not getting a separation. We're obviously going to get into Carson Palmer not playing a very good opening game, and I don't think it's going to be that bad. But at the same time, you're in a situation where you're going to need your defense to really step up. That's where a lot of the talent is. And until these receivers come around, and we can talk about John Brown at some point too, whether or not they even come around, we can talk about 2013, 2014. They had a healthy and productive Michael Floyd then. Obviously, they don't have that now.
Right, here's Bruce Arians on losing a guy who had a team record 20 touchdowns last season.
You just got to pick up the pieces and go. You know, David Johnson became David Johnson because somebody got hurt. And it's an opportunity for Kerwin and Andre Ellington to look really fast again, to come back and pick up the pace.
I mean, I get based on what we've seen so far, it would be Kerwin Williams, probably first and second down. Andre Ellington, sort of your third down back. That's what I'm guessing.
Mm-hmm.
You know, now you've added Chris Johnson. Does he immediately get back into the mix? You
what
know,
about DJ Foster?
I mean, Elijah Penny, do they trust him? He's so young. He's unproven, obviously, in the regular season. How much of a rotation do you think it'll be? Darren mentioned, you know, DJ Foster coming on board as well, the Scottsdale guy.
I agree with you where I think Kerwin Williams, when you want to run the ball and you need some yardage, he has been the guy who, at this point, I think he's the most established runner because Chris Johnson has the great resume, but they weren't too excited by what he did in the preseason. And Kerwin Williams beat him out a week and a half ago for that spot. So it's not like Chris Johnson is all of a sudden going to jump him on the depth chart right now unless Chris Johnson just blows him away in practice or something. So I think it's Kerwin. And then obviously Andre, who has looked good. I thought Andre looked really nice in the first game, caught a couple of passes. And he's the guy that I think maybe he has the highest ceiling among these running backs, where if he can get back to what he was a couple years ago, you could rely on him more and more, you know, in these next few weeks.
In fact, here you go, Andre Ellington, on what the David Johnson injury means for the rest of the running back room.
It just leaves a lot of the other guys with more opportunities. It's some huge shoes to fill. We were more than capable of doing it. But as an offense, we just got to pull tighter together and execute better.
And I would agree. I mean, you know, much more bullish on Andre Ellington than we were a year ago at this time. You know, I mean, he's not going down with first contact. He has more of a burst. And look, I mean, Andre Ellington in space can still be lethal.
Yeah.
So, you know, is the defense going to respect the rest of the offense to actually give him any of that space? And, you know, I think that becomes the question. You know, do you have those weapons in the passing game that you cited 2013, 2014, half of 2015? You know, I mean, is the precision there? It certainly wasn't in week one at Detroit.
No. And I think that's the concern part. I mean, obviously, once David Johnson gets hurt, everybody's like, you know, sad trombone and everything. But and I understand that. But if the passing game was clicking, if Carson Palmer had a good game, you know, I think everything changes, and that didn't happen. And that's where the major concern is. It isn't so much that you lost the major guy to injury. It's that you lost it on top of the fact that you didn't play very well in the first place. And you're trying to avoid having a repeat of last season where David Johnson almost was 1,000, and you still were under 500.
And honestly, even with David Johnson, I thought the run blocking was worse than the pass protection.
So
it's the offensive line as well.
That's what I was going to say, is that these receivers didn't do too well. Carson didn't look very good, and then the offensive line didn't play well. So if your offensive line is going to give Carson time, the passing game can work. I mean, if he's a veteran quarterback – Bruce was saying the arm strength is still there. It was just a bad game. So if you give Carson time in the pocket, I think it can still click. But the fact that he's not mobile at all, so if guys are going to get into the backfield quickly, Carson can't run anywhere. He can't get out of the pocket and get away from them. So the offensive line really has to hold up. And now DJ Humphries is hurt. Mikey Potty left really late in that game, and he's still dealing with the tricep. So there's just so many questions offensively at this point.
I tell you, the Cardinals coach is definitely earning their money with the Indianapolis game plan, right? Trying to figure something out on the offensive side of the ball. And, you know, as much as there might be things they want to do, it sounds like BA is going to sort of do some reverse engineering. He's going to take the running backs, figure out their wants and needs, and then draw it up from there.
You play to the guys' strengths that are on the field. You know, David and Andre are outstanding receivers, so when they're in there, they're dual threats. So that part of the offense doesn't change. The running game, Kerwin likes all the same runs. Will feature what they like because it's still part of the offense. No one's learning anything new.
And Andre Ellington has been known to like a lot of the same plays as David Johnson, right, Darren?
Yeah,
which is one of the reasons he made the final 53.
Well, again, he's such a good receiver. That also helps in the fact that he can catch the ball out of the backfield, which even though Chris Johnson had a bunch of catches early in his career, having watched him the last couple of years, he's clearly not the receiver Andre or David is. And Kerwin Williams really has never been able to show much from that regard. So DJ Foster does, though, so there's another possibility. I mean,
sure.
Again, when we start talking about these running backs, it feels a lot like committee, which which has always been kind of how this team was until they figured out that Chris Johnson was really good in 2015 and Andre was hurt and they weren't ready to let David Johnson do anything. And then Chris Johnson got hurt and you were forced to feed David Johnson. But up until that point, Arians was all about sharing everything around anyway. So, and they probably would have done some in 2015 as well. If Andre hadn't been hurt, it probably would have been Andre and Chris Johnson. So it's not like they haven't been through this before. You talk about the reverse engineering. You know, that's what everybody's kind of hoping for, is that things get tweaked and you kind of go from there. And, you know, again, it's not a good thing. I mean, we can keep talking about all this stuff, but losing David Johnson is not a good thing. It's just not.
And we can talk about roles, and we can talk about playbook and scheming and game planning, but none of it matters if Carson is going to play like he did in Detroit.
Right. Mm-hmm.
You know, and you walk around town, and I'm sure you guys get it all the time. Geez, what'd you think of Carson Palmer? And the first word I use is just shocked. I was stunned. We saw nothing like that in the preseason. No. He didn't practice like that. He didn't play like that in the preseason. You know, I was half stunned just talking to Bruce Arians after the game, and we sort of had a bit of a Q&A, and as usual, Bruce Arians was very blunt about his quarterback.
How would you assess Carson's play today?
Poor. You know, he just high throws are normally usually mechanics, scooting up, playing too fast, and put too much on it. So, you know, those are things that are easily correctable, but it costs us this one.
Some of it on the receivers early looked like they were out of sync at times as well.
No, it was mostly him.
That's what I get for throwing in half an opinion there, half an observation. once again, dead wrong over there, Paulie Pigskin. But you know what? BA said the same thing at halftime, Kyle. We were coming off the field. And we're talking, and he just said he's playing way too fast. In BA's words, he's got to slow down. And, you know, something obviously was off. And I guess my working theory, you guys can tell me, and you always do, whether I'm off base again here or not, but if you lose your starting left tackle, and DJ Humphries started the game, you know, midway through the first quarter, he was handling Ziggy Ansah one-on-one, and he was doing a pretty darn good job. Now, all of a sudden, you've lost him, and you got John Wetzel playing left tackle, and Wetzel's had exactly zero reps all week playing left tackle. Who knows that better than anyone? Carson Palmer. So, to me, if you're trying to explain why he's playing fast in BA's assessment, maybe he knows what he's got at left tackle, and then all of a sudden his internal clock speeds up as a result.
Yeah, it's tough to know, and it's shaded by the fact that when DJ was in there, Palmer threw that horrible pick early on where I think it was to David Johnson, but it was 10 yards away from him, way past him. It almost looked like he thought that defender was on his team or something. So that's why it's almost like, okay, is that just an excuse? But he certainly could have settled down after that and had a fine game. So it's really tough to know what happened. It's interesting that, you know, the big thing right now fan-wise is that Carson Palmer is done and this is just the beginning of the end for him. He hasn't played well in a year, blah, blah, blah. And obviously, he is the key to what they're going to do in this stretch without David Johnson, because if he doesn't get back to average or a little bit better than average quarterback play, your offense, I mean, what's the ceiling? 17 points a game probably, and then if you do turnovers, like some of the defensive guys are saying, they played pretty well, but when you're starting at the 50-yard line or they fumbled at the 10, I mean, the defense can only do so much if you're giving them short fields.
Which, you know, that always makes me pause when you start getting quotes. It's first game and you're already getting quotes from the defense about, if you know, having to defend on short fields. That's not an ideal situation.
Yeah, we
already
can see where that's trending. Yeah, yes. There could be a divide in the locker room.
You know, and we'll see how it goes. I mean, I thought in 2014 things stayed together pretty well all season, considering the offense didn't generate a lot during the year until, you know, and then at the very end it kind of collapsed on it. But the defense, I think, kind of took it upon themselves, like, we understand. But that was without Carson. If Carson's going to be on the field, I think there's a feeling like this stuff has to happen. And again, that's why this week is so huge in terms of playing the Colts. And, I mean, the Colts got their doors blown off in L.A. against the Rams. And the Colts aren't very good, and they're not going to have Andrew Luck. And you figure that whatever the problems are, including not having David Johnson, you should be able to win this game. And you better win it. And quite frankly, the way it went with the Rams, you know, the concern, I know they're not going to talk about this in the locker room because now it's just going to be about winning and losing. That's all that matters. But I know the outside perception, especially from the fan base, I'm sure is going to be, if they win this game 21-17, everybody's going, what the hell? The Rams just killed them by 40 points.
All of a sudden it becomes Alabama against a team from the MAC. I mean, you know, you got to have style points in there.
Yep.
And, you know, Bertrand Berry was saying this week on the Red Sea Report, I heard him say, look, it's not that easy. teams get embarrassed in the NFL. 9 times out of 10, they're going to rebound with a pretty good effort in their home opener. You know, I mean, unless you've totally tanked for the season or you're the 0-16 Lions from a few years ago, 2008, I mean, you're going to get a lot more fight, you would figure, out of the Colts just based on that week one result.
You should get that out of the Cardinals, too, under those same pretense.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
But in fact, we talk about Carson Palmer, and, you know, look, the end is going to come at some point, and he's going to turn 38 late this season. Until he puts together two or three back-to-back-to-back poor performances, that's when I think we'll start to know he's done, because he has a history of rebounding from bad games, doesn't he, Kyle?
Sure. I mean, you look around the NFL in week one and look at how many quarterbacks had bad games. I mean, Joe Flacco was bad. Andy Dalton was bad.
Oh, yeah.
Kirk Cousins was bad.
Eli Manning
was bad.
Aaron Rodgers wasn't very good.
Yeah, Russell Wilson wasn't very good.
Yeah, quarterbacks have bad games. It's just
Kurt Warner would have 1-5 interception game a year.
It's true.
And nobody wanted to dump him.
Right. You're right.
Well,
yeah.
I shouldn't say that. They probably did want to dump him. I just forget. Okay,
remember he got booed. You know, the Hall of Famer got booed in week four there this first year.
And like you're saying, Paul, when you're on the road, no matter how bad the team is, and you don't have Andrew Luck, and they don't have probably Vontae Davis, they have a lot of key guys missing, but on the road, early start, without David Johnson, I don't think style points figures into it at this point. I just think they need to win this game, get home 1-1, and then just start feeling like the season isn't already spiraling out of control after two games. So from their perspective, if they go in and win 14-13, I don't think it really matters at this point, because I think you're reeling a little bit and you're just trying to right the ship. And at some point we'll figure out what this team has, whether Carson Palmer can get the passing game clicking. And if he doesn't, then the story is probably going to be written. But if they just win this game, get it back going, then we can kind of see how it turns out. But for now, just win, baby, as Al Davis would say.
Bruce Arians said that on Monday. You know, Carson Palmer had already called him. They're talking about a game plan for the Colts on Monday as well on Arizona Sports 98.7 FM. You had the GM, Steve Keim, and, you know, he had a few things to say about Carson Palmer, starting with some of the technical, mechanical issues.
He just looked antsy in the pocket to me, you know, with his feet. And some of the things, whether it was those two or three deep outs to JJ and John where he put him in the dirt, little things like that are just mechanical issues, because Carson's extremely accurate. And in those situations, it didn't look like him.
All right, hashtag correctable. At least you hope. You're thinking Carson, you know, saw the film, saw perhaps what he was doing wrong. They drilled that this week in practice. I'll be very curious to see if he's still going to take a Veterans Day off on Wednesday.
Well, you know, he said he's not going to change anything. He said, I'm not going to overreact. We're going to stick to the plan. So I'd assume he's just going to keep doing it. Like you said, chalk it up to one bad game and just stay with the routine.
It was interesting. B.A. said even he couldn't explain the first pick, and neither could Carson. You know, so, you know, to your guy's point earlier, you know, and that was when D.J. Humphries was in the game.
That bugs me to a point where I'm like, can they not explain it, or they don't want to explain it? Like, look, and I'm not saying this is what happened at all, and obviously Bruce kind of implied it was all on Carson, but let's say David Johnson ran the wrong route or John Brown ran the wrong route or whatever it was. Carson Palmer not saying that. He's not going to say that.
Yeah. He didn't say it in 2013 when it happened the first half of the season.
Right. He's not going to say that, but it bothers me that he's not. I mean, your alternatives are you know what happened and you can fix it, or you don't know what happened and what the hell then? What the hell, man? I mean, it's just, yeah. It's one of those things where I'd rather have him say, you know, I have some ideas, but, you know, I'm not going to get into it right now. You know, we're trying to work on stuff. To say I'm not sure what happened, that always concerns me.
Well, here's what the GM Steve Keim had to say about week number two.
Well, I mean, I've seen Carson have some off days before, and like a lot of quarterbacks do, but generally such a competitor that it makes him angry, and he usually bounces back and plays well. So I'd be surprised if he didn't come out firing next week, and I'd be really shocked if he didn't play extremely well.
And once again, you know, there's this element that Carson can be a perfectionist, and according to BA, can put a lot of pressure on himself. And it makes you wonder, doesn't it? Now without David Johnson, I mean, he's going to really have to guard against that.
And that's what I felt like. The defense was playing so well early in that game, and he threw that second interception, which was he was really trying to fit it into John Brown, and it sailed on him, and it gave Detroit good field position, which I think they turned into a touchdown, and then the game gets closer. That's something I worry about with Carson, where he puts too much on his shoulders and tries to make these passes that maybe aren't the right decisions instead of throwing it away or dumping it off. if he does do that and he throws picks or gets sacked and fumbles, then you're in a really bad position. So I think that's going to be stressed is, yeah, we lost David Johnson, but we don't have to score on every possession. He's not going to be a game manager in this offense, but it might be something where they just realize that maybe the ceiling is a little bit lower now and let's make sure we're making the right decisions.
It's always been funny to me watching Carson over these last 5 years or whatever it's been that, you know, he comes across his off-field persona is pretty calm. It's very, I'm a calming influence on everybody. I'm a veteran and all this stuff, but he gets on the field and sometimes good, sometimes bad, obviously, but there is a very gunslinger attitude to him with a lot of things. I mean, he makes some throws that it's like, it's Farvian almost, like, I'm going to be really aggressive, the risk taking. Yeah. I don't think it's mistakes. I'm going to try and jam it into this tight little window. I think of the end of the Pittsburgh game in 2015 or even that pass the other day. I know it sailed on him.
Right.
But again, one of the reasons it sails on him is because he's trying to get it in this window of over one guy and in front of another guy. And you've got a very little room for error in terms of how you let that ball go.
But the last one, though, to Andre Ellington, I mean, it was just inaccurate. Behind the receiver, and, you know, he tips it up into the air. And
when you talk about the accuracy, and Kai mentioned it earlier when we played one of the sound bites, it wasn't the interceptions that bothered me. Obviously, the interceptions are worse, but it was those two out routes. Those out routes were John Brown and J.J. Nelson were wide open. Those were 12 to 15-yard gains. All he has to do is play pitch and catch. The cornerback's like 3 yards back or whatever it is because they made a nice route, and he just worm burned them. And that's stuff you see from some other quarterbacks we've had around here. That hasn't been Carson Palmer.
And that's one of the reasons I asked Bruce Arians the out of sync question with the receivers, is because to me it looked like, you know, either A, the pass was way too early, or B, the receivers are going too far downfield before making their break. I mean, and there was something seriously out of sync there.
On that pass, on those passes, that's when I don't understand the way they were falling. Don't you just throw a laser there?
It sails out of bounds? Well, just on a rope all the way to the sideline.
To the guy.
Right.
And because the way they were falling, it wasn't like, it didn't seem like the cut. Like, if he would have just put more mustard on it, it would have gotten to him. It was on the right line. It just fell short.
And because he did that a million times in training camp,
yeah,
and almost all of them were on the mark,
yeah,
that's why I started thinking, man, what's going on here? Yeah. Are the receivers not at the spot? Was that supposed to be a dig or a curl, and the receiver's not coming back to the ball? I mean, that's why I started wondering, is it truly entirely on Carson? Are we back to the beginning of 2013?
I thought the exact same thing on the first out route. I think it was to John Brown, and I wondered, did he go too deep on that pass? Because it was 2 or 3 yards short, and I think this is a huge week to see how Carson Palmer looks. Again on the road, again in an early start. You're playing a pretty poor defense that's shouldn't be able to get too good of a pass rush on you, and maybe that's another part. Maybe he was a little bit jumpy because he was feeling pressure a lot in that game, wasn't doing his footwork right, was getting rid of the ball too fast. He really needs to bounce back because it was some bad decisions, but like you guys are saying, the passes were just poor, and we don't see that a lot. We've seen bad decisions in the past, and he gets intercepted, but the accuracy has usually been there, and in this game, he just threw quite a few bad passes.
To Darren's point about him being incredibly chill all the time, I mean, you can't tell whether he's got a 4-touchdown game or a 4-interception game. And he'll come to the sideline. Even the final interception, he comes to the sideline, he's watching the Jumbotron. I'm about 5 feet from him, and he's watching. They showed like 3 or 4 different replays and a couple of tight ISOs, right? And he's just looking at it, and he's kind of exasperated, but not really. And at this point, nobody's around him. I mean, you know, the guys are just giving him a lot of room, and he goes back to the bench on his own. And he never really reacts either way, which I guess is a great attribute to have if you're a quarterback and, you know, everyone's watching you. You know, look, there was a lot more emotion from some of the defensive guys, and I'll tell you another sideline story here in a minute. Let's get to Steve Keim talking about the first-round rookie Hassan Reddick, because we got to leave you at least one positive here on Cardinals Underground.
I think he played extremely well, particularly for a rookie in his first game. Not only did he do good things on the perimeter and in coverage, you know, you saw how well he closes and how well he tackles in space.
there was the one tackle, and it was a great call by Dave Pasch on the Cardinals radio network where he said, right, it's Reddick on Riddick crime. And he just took out Theo Riddick. And he comes to the sideline, and all the coaches are yelling at him, see, see, that's what you saw. That's what you saw. And I took that to mean that, you know, trust your film work, yeah. young man. I mean, you saw it. It was a tendency, and they went to it on third down.
That was an awesome play. And just, I mean, he did that a couple of times where he really just, he realized what he was doing, and he just exploded. You know, he's just such an athlete. You can tell once he realizes what a play is and he knows where to go, especially when the ball is coming his way, when he doesn't have to break a lot of stuff down and just go tackle the ball carrier. He really showed a lot in that game. And there might be some bumps moving forward.
There will be bumps.
Sure. There's going to be mental issues that he doesn't quite figure out. But you saw his potential in that game. And if he's playing well, I think you saw what the secondary could do in this game where – Matt Stafford had played really well, but a lot of those big plays were after the 2.5 seconds where you're covering as a defensive back, and then he scrambled around or the pressure didn't get there, and then it turns into 3.5, 4 seconds, which even the best defensive backs are going to struggle in that situation. So I think there's a lot to build on defensively between the linebackers and what the secondary did, and I think the defensive line and the pass rushers just have to sustain it for 4 quarters because they were pretty good for about 1.5 quarters, maybe 2 quarters.
I just love the acceleration on Hassan Reddick, the seek and destroy. He'll just run right through you if you're a ball carrier or you're a receiver. Here's my last question, and Darren, I'm putting right to you. You're looking at me over here, right?
Of course.
Number 2 cornerback, what'd you make of Justin Bethel, and what do you think going forward based on week 1?
It's funny you bring that up because that just popped into my head, a point that I was thinking about making. And it's, look, I think for the first 3 quarters, I think he played really well. I mean, he had a pick six. He made a couple of pass breakups. The first touchdown to Galladay, you hope that he's in a little better place. But if you go back and look at it, and again, close doesn't count. This is the pros. If you either do the job or you don't do the job, he didn't do the job. But he had his hand in there. Like, I thought for a minute when you watch the replay, it looks like he might rip the ball out. Didn't happen. Galladay held it on. The bomb, which I didn't see real well live because I was coming down to the field right at that moment and I was in the opposite end zone, but I watched it on replay. I thought he did a nice job covering him most of the way down the field. And we all know that Galladay laid out for that. First of all, great catch.
Great catch.
Great catch, and I don't know if you defend that even if you're right there. He did look like he slowed up at the end, and I'd be curious to ask Justin Bethel, did you think that was overthrown to the point where that's why you let up a little bit? And Galladay decided to dive for it, and he made the catch. Now, even if you're going full speed, do you stop that? I don't know if you stop it because of, again, the amazing catch, but I would have liked to see him follow through that. Obviously, you can't give up 2 touchdowns at the end. Do I think he was horrible? I don't think he was horrible. Do I think there were other DBs that also struggled in the fourth quarter especially? I do. I mean, Tyrann Mathieu has to be better than he was in coverage. Yeah.
In the slot on Golden Tate, either he wore down, there was too much of a cushion.
And again,
but, you
it
know,
goes back to the pressure that Kyle was talking about. Too many missed sacks. There were times when I thought Stafford had too much time. I mean, there was enough that I thought, okay, the pressure's okay. But for the amount of money that Chandler Jones is getting, for what Marcus Golden wants to get, when he can get his contract redone, I mean, you got to have a little bit more.
Well, Steve Keim said in his weekly appearance on 98.7, he said that Chandler Jones should have had 4 sacks in his opinion. He just didn't close.
Especially in that first half. You remember that 3rd-and-13 scramble for Stafford, which led to the first touchdown. There was a couple other plays, the touchdown pass itself. He
Reddick
was moving around.
Sack.
Reddick missed a sack. There a lot of instances where they didn't quite get there. It's still a good sign that they got pressure. Yeah. I mean, they were in the area, and Stafford did a really nice job. I think going back to Bethel, I was happy with the performance, and I think talking about the number 2 cornerback who is making $1 million or $2, I mean, he's not getting paid to be a great corner, and I thought he did fine. He had the big play. Like Darren said, that was an incredible catch. Matt Stafford was super impressive. I mean, you're looking at maybe at this point a top 8 quarterback in the NFL who was at home. That wide receiver has been flashing all preseason. So I think if you get that type of performance out of Justin Bethel, I think you're going to be fine.
Yeah, after the second touchdown catch by Galladay where he was, he just dove all out. I mean, even Larry came down the sideline. He was looking at the Jumbotron and sort of nodding his head and going,
that
wow.
That was an amazing
That was a great catch.
And a great throw.
And you know what? Bethel's still learning. I'll just give you a quick little anecdote. You know, you can only get from the sideline here on Cardinals Underground. And that was the first touchdown that came in the trips formation. You know, the coaches were screaming right before the snap, get outside, get outside. And it was his alignment, I think, that cost him ultimately that half step and preventing him from getting his hand in there and making the play, and at least a pass breakup. So he's still learning. You know, I mean, he's not the most experienced cornerback. And they throw that trips formation, and his guy all of a sudden is on the inside. He's kind of used to playing the outside. And then, you know, so hopefully he chalks that up, and, you know, he's better for it going forward.
Yeah, and that's the key. If you can learn from it, and it, obviously it's a mistake, you watch the film, you figure out what you did wrong, and we'll see if he does grow as the season goes on.
Should I give everyone props here that, you know, we did this whole Cardinals Underground podcast and nobody brought up the Eastern start kick time, you know, the 10 a.m. Arizona kickoff time, because the Cardinals are going to get that again this week.
1-6 now in their last seven.
I mean,
that's why it goes back to, I think you just have to win this game, get out of there, win it, worry about style points another time.
Okay. All right. There you go. Cardinals Underground and azcardinals.com.